Around the NFL podcast has never played in the NFL.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by Intuit QuickBooks, the official sponsor of the NFL. My name is Dan Hansis. I am coming to you from a city filled with heroes in bunkers. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What's up?
Budweiser. How's everybody doing?
You sound like you're doing better. I mean, when you break out the classic Budweiser frogs, it's good times.
No, it's just like you got to separate your life from your work. I'm just grinding. It's been a long 36 hours, but hopefully my wife is on a soft reboot as of right now. She's with the children. She's in the same room as the children now. So I think things will slowly get back to normal. Not in the world, but at least in our house, if we're lucky.
From what I know of Emily, she will be delighted to find out that, you know, hundreds of thousands of listeners have heard her described in a soft reboot mode.
I mean, I love the woman. She's the light of my life. But that was the term I used to her. I said, honey, listen, I'm going to be going back in the garage around 12:30. And I know you're still not feeling close to 100%, but I'm going to need a soft reboot just to be there because these kids are not, it's not going to survive. It was basically Russian roulette yesterday, and I got out of it okay. The kids did not destroy the house. The house was a total mess when I got in, but no one was missing an arm or trapped underneath, you know, a bookcase or anything. But we just can't risk that again. So Emily in a soft reboot right now. And what I'm going to do is once we finish up the show, I will, like a good husband, allow her to return to her chambers and continue to rest.
I think it's important that you need to have, like, one thing I'm finding, I'm enjoying actually my time with my kids, but something starts to happen intellectually when the only person that you're interacting with is under the age of 10, essentially. And I was thinking back to a couple weeks ago when Dan and Wes and I hung out with Colleen and Gonzo and Lakeisha and others, and I thought even that, should I be home and, you know, doing the dad thing? And it's like, thank God we actually got together that day. Because I'm not sure when any of us will hang out socially ever again. And I'm at the point where I'm just missing jukeboxes. I'm missing just the luxuries of city life and life in general and being able to go somewhere and you don't know who will be there. And now it's like it's the same conversations over and over about this racing game that my two children are obsessed with on the computer. I mean, I'm starting to burn out on the topic.
And they lack just basic, you know, common sense and logic. So you try to have a conversation with them, and it just like goes in circles or goes off on a tangent. And it's just like, can I have an adult conversation with someone?
You cannot.
Can I sit on a bar stool? You know, can I just go somewhere? But there's nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. Speaking of which, of the shutdown and everyone being inside, quarantined essentially, I did get out of the house briefly to run an errand today, and I was driving in my car, and I drove past the grocery store, and there's still a line to get into the grocery store, and I'm a little confused about the line thing. So we're being told by our local government that there is no issue with food shortage, okay? People are just keep going to the stores and buying out the stores. Where are they putting all this stuff they're getting? One, these are real questions. I'm not messing around. And two, if I am not doing the same thing, am I putting my family in peril? Should I be just stocking up here? What's going on? Are you guys stocking up? What's going on here? What's the deal with these grocery stores?
I'm not really stocking up, but I think the line, which I saw yesterday coming out of Sprouts, which was next to Office Depot, it was a good 30, 40 feet long. I presume that people are not allowed to queue up at the register. You're not allowed to stand so close to each other. So I think they're just letting people in, like a few people at a time.
That's I have information. Yeah. The Whole Foods next to my house has taped lines. And the reason the lines are so long is because you're supposed to stay 6 feet apart. So they're queuing people out and they're only allowed to have 10 people in the store at once.
Wow. The store itself, when you get inside, I live across the street from Yvonne's and I've been scouting out different ones, just seeing like, all right, what's a little more empty?
Bird dog in it.
I had a guess that like the expensive grocery store, which is like a mile away that I've only been to once, and I
you
realized
you taped dog in the Vons?
No, this was a different Vons. This was what the Bristol Farms, and it's like you go one time, you're like, why is everything so expensive? You never go back again. I had a hunch that maybe people weren't at that expensive one. That's like the rich, and I was right. It was like empty. But even as Erica said, there are lines outside. But once you get in, it's actually the most pleasant shopping experience I've ever had at Vons. It's empty. There's no lines for the register. So that's the trade-off.
That makes
sense. I like Greg being like Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window, you know, binoculars on Vons for the right time to enter.
Well, you know, it hasn't been an asset living here, watching all the accidents and bum fights across the street for the last 6 years. But now we're back. Being across the street from Vons has been good.
I decided when I turned probably about 32 or 33 years old that I would never wait in a line ever again to get in somewhere. And I'm just going to, whether it's a nightclub or a bar or whatever, I'm going to keep that policy with the grocery store. So I'm just going to wait till this dies down.
Yeah, wait it out. Life's too short for lines.
Yeah, but like I need food. Like I haven't found chicken or meat. Sorry, Mark. And
really?
Like so
gross.
Long.
So you should really drive to Santa Monica because even at any time of the day, it's well stocked.
I told here. You come last over. Night, Greg. I want you to text me so I can go to your Vons when it's like the coast is clear.
I love that Santa Monica is this like total utopia.
No, yeah. I'm not saying it's any better, but I'm just saying they got meat. It was like that for the first 3 or 4 days, but now it's fine. It's fine.
Okay, so today Wednesday, hump day. Get over that hump.
I mean, I guess. It's really not a functional Monday through Friday environment at the moment, so I don't know what hump day
Having no podcast
to.
On the weekend will be different. I mean, that's a
yeah.
advantage.
What's on the other side of the hump?
There's no days anymore.
More sweatpants.
we have socially distanced from days of the week. But
Erica's searching for meat.
Today's show, we're just going to do basically a news rundown and just get you caught up on what's happened since we last spoke to you on Tuesday. And there was a fair bit of info. So unless anyone has anything else they want to add, you want to just dive into it?
Well, just maybe as a tease, like the Nicole Roby Coleman news has rocked the NFL. And yes. We were texting about it quite a bit. And so that'll be our big sell of the show. Stay tuned for that.
And you're going to think because it's the last news item, it's the least important. But it's the other way around. It's like going to Lollapalooza or something.
It's our segment.
Coachella. It's, you know, the headliner. Just look at it.
NFC arms race 2020. Roby Coleman to the Eagles.
Let's do some news. All right, let's start with a little bit of league calendar information. The league year started on time, as we all know, after much hand-wringing about whether the NFL should push it back because of COVID-19 and the coronavirus. They did not, as we all know. And that doesn't mean that internally in the league that there's still a push for this league calendar to have some flexibility, given the completely unique circumstances that we're dealing with right now as a society. ESPN's Adam Schefter and Diana Rossini reported that NFL GMs are in favor of the 2020 NFL draft being postponed, but Roger Goodell plans on keeping the April 23rd start date. I am on record. Once again, that is my 40th birthday. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. How about, you know, things are already kind of terrible. Just give me the day off for my birthday. Rog, be cool about this. It's already been kind of a rough 2020. That's where I stand. All the GMs agree, probably for a similar reason. What do you guys come down on this? Do you think there should be a postponement? I should explain what's behind it beyond my birthday, that because of all the pro days being wiped away and all the scouts being taken off the road, essentially it's put all the NFL teams in a place where they feel very uncomfortable. They're making huge decisions, and they feel like they may not be prepared by next month.
Yeah, I hate to be the house boy here, but I'm fine with this being in the hands of the people who are actually talking to decision makers and higher ups. Out of all the things to be outraged about, I don't think that the NFL draft is really on the top of my radar.
No, I hear you, but I also understand why the GMs are trying to have their voices heard. I think there's an idea that there's a competitive disadvantage depending on maybe where you live and what each team's situation is going to be and what the world could look like in a month, that your team could be really in a place where you don't feel like you can do the draft as well as you can versus maybe another team in a city where it's not as bad, it's not still in a lockdown. Like, I get it. Like, the Olympics is a much bigger deal. The draft, you can do just, you know, calling in a pick. But Mickey Loomis said, this isn't a fantasy draft. What is the rush? And I think the GMs are kind of saying, like, what is the world going to be like in 6 weeks? Because you might just be delaying the inevitable, which is canceling it then. I mean, maybe that's Roger Goodell's idea, is that, like, by not canceling it now, you leave open the window that you could do it and that it's still up for debate. But I think it's understandable to maybe want to push it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with waiting a little bit, though, just to see. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything's really going to change between now and the draft from what you generally hear. But if, you know, a little bit more time before it's officially moved, I defined it to be the second sort of major league year event where there is a strong voice from 32 front offices, or at least a large majority of them, saying, can we hold off on the league year? Can we hold off on the draft? And Goodell is pushing back, which makes me wonder what the owners think. But, you know, they are, at this point, it sounds like shutting down today, I believe, all facilities so that because initially it was like the teams in New York and the teams in California distinctly were at a disadvantage because they couldn't assemble in any way, where if you're, you know, somewhere else, that was still possible in some states. So that's meant to level the playing field. That helps, but it still creates a lot of issues on how to communicate. And if you're a first-year front office and a first-year coaching staff, I just think that this season is going to the mounting complications and pressure to cohere as a team are going to be incredible for the new groups versus, say, the Steelers or the Saints that have been doing the same thing and operating the same way forever.
Roger Goodell, if you had a look at an imaginary National Football League flowchart, he answers to the owners ultimately, correct?
Yes.
So if 32 GMs all agree, why wouldn't ownership just ramp up the pressure on good old Rog and make this happen? So that's one thing I was wondering. The other thing is, the gears of the machine have already been ground to a halt. They cleared out the whole Vegas thing. There's nothing to be postponed in terms of an actual physical setting. So it does feel like something they could probably change on the fly without there being a ton of, you know, logistical concerns. So
yeah, that's true. And to be clear about this report, there is something called a GM subcommittee, and they did take a vote, and it was 6-1 in favor of pushing it. So there's some level of making this official. I did talk to someone who works from a team, and like, once free agency ended, I think everyone in the NFL that's in a front office just turned the page and is straight into draft mode. Everyone is just watching tape. They're just doing it at home, you know, and they're probably talking like us on Zoom or whatever they want to, or sending email. But it sounds like personnel departments, I think they're just like on their computers watching tape. It's not for them too different, except, you know, if you have families, they're surrounded by their families just like we are.
The one other thing I would say that they need to think about, and, you know, others are suggesting this too, that if OTAs and training camps and all this other stuff are wiped out, I mean, and even before you have rookies involved in the process of the offseason, that the ability to kind of like have coaches share information with players where they put that big freeze on that, I think they should loosen some of that and say, this is a very unusual offseason. Let's help all these teams have as much communication as they can with their players about new schemes, offense, defense. I just think that we're going to see a playoff field so similar to last year if it's the same. If new teams and new, like, you know, staffs are forced to get it done in like no time, that situation.
I'd put a sandwich on that, Mark. Although your logic is sound on some level, I think there's just turnover every year, and I don't see a direct correlation to that. Although
maybe by the
like
time
it.
You get to September and October, like you are where you are, or even by the end of August. But if there's no training camp, it is going to like F up certain operations that are starting over with completely new offenses.
I totally get that. But also every year you see teams that are supposed to be locked and loaded and looking hot and dandy with their coaches and their personnel, and then they just flatline anyway. So
these conversations are so weird. Like, if you take a step back and put ourselves into the mind that we were in a month ago, in that we're at home having a conversation how the global pandemic is going to affect like pro days.
Oh my God.
It's just like, it's just like, and it's true. Like that it is something to think about because the NFL is just this tiny little part of the world, but we can talk about that tiny part, but it is so freaking bizarre.
Everything is terrible. Let's get into some personnel moves. We'll start in New Orleans where the Saints and Janoris Jenkins agree on a 2-year $16.75 million extension. Takes him through 2022. Rap Sheet had this. He came over to the Saints. Jackrabbit off waivers from the Giants. Had some butting of heads behind the scenes with the G-Men. And he played pretty well with the Saints. And now they give him a new deal that if he stayed employed for those 2 years, would be playing cornerback at age 34 potentially. And you line him up across from Marshon Lattimore, and that's not a bad combo.
I'm amazed by the Saints team's ability to stay so talented this offseason. Like, this contract's, I think, a very team-friendly contract. He played well for the Saints last year. They're getting an upgrade over Eli Apple. You look at their roster. I was thinking about it, like, the hardest thing to do in the NFL is be a top-five team every year. And I think that's one of the amazing things about the Belichick-Brady run is that they did it. And I think the Saints have a chance to be a top-five team for the fourth straight year. And I don't know any team other than the Patriots who's had, like, there haven't been many teams who's had a 3-4 straight year run like that where there's no dip. Saints fans will obviously be the first to say, like, it just doesn't feel like that exciting when you don't capitalize on it by doing anything in January.
It's funny because they had that string of, like, 7-9 years over and over where people wondered if maybe Sean Payton was running out of rope. And I remember I used to wonder what Mickey Loomis was actually doing as an NFL GM when he spent all his time, you know, cobbling together the Pelicans. I didn't understand that arrangement, but they have been one of those premier teams, and everyone's, oh, the Bucks are loading up for, you know, to win the division and march right into the playoffs. Well, it's like, sorry, the Saints are doing the same exact thing, and I right now, I don't care what is happening. I trust the Saints to be there at the end more than I do the Bucks, no matter what Tampa's getting together.
Which take do you feel less confident about in March 2020? Mickey Loomis has too much on his hands, and that's why the Saints aren't winning, or Bruce Arians, his heart isn't in it with the Bucks?
Well, I think at this point, like, they've both been proven false. There was a period where I think that my Mickey Loomis concerns were,
well, they won 7-9 three straight years. That was when you were honking.
That's
about
when
that.
I was beating that drum. It's not.
It was a great
13-3,
though.
And I'm
it
not sure Loomis cares about this team. You know,
sometimes, like, you know, Max Kellerman or Stephen A. Smith. It's not about whether the take is right or not. Was it a good take? It was. That was a great take.
Yeah, I love it. That's all that matters.
It was a saucy take. It was a saucy take. In other news, speaking of the Bucks, and Ndamukong Suh is staying in town. He agrees to a 1-year, $8 million contract. The Bucks are all of a sudden a place that people really want to be at because Tom Brady's the quarterback. So you got Shaq Barrett back there on the franchise tag. You got JPP, who just re-signed for two years. And now Sue, he's 33 years old now, but he played a ton of snaps last season. He's, at least according to metrics, advanced metrics, PFF and the like, he's fine to okay to fine at this point in his career. But a nice little piece and continuity along the defensive line is a good thing as long as you're not a progress stopper, right, Wes?
He had a pretty good year last year. The Bucks, nobody could run on them. With Vita Vea, who I think might be the best nose tackle in the NFL now, and Sue, and then you've got, like you said, JPP and Shaq Barrett, the middle linebackers with Devin White and Lavonte David. This is a really good front seven, and I don't think you're going to be able to run on them again this year, if there is a this year.
Sue, according to PFF, was the number 30 interior lineman out of 119 qualifiers. So, yes, he played at a high level. Not bad for a guy that's been doing it for, 13 years or so now.
Football Outsiders keeps track of, you know, run defense. And there's some stat, I think, like three of the top five run defenses of the last 20 years Todd Bowles has been associated with. So that's what the Bowles essence gives you. He's going to stop the run.
It's a good thing, too, that Tom Brady wasn't one of the people that Sue stomped on back in his bad boy days in Detroit, because now they're going to be, you know, hanging out with each other, eating spaghetti.
I kind of miss that Sue. I like that Sue way better, like the misunderstood ball player who just likes to play hard and stomp a guy and kick a guy in the nuts every once in a while. Like him better than the guy hanging out with Lee Iacocca and talking about Chrysler. Yeah.
I once interviewed his mom for that celebrated Mother's Day piece, I think I mentioned, and she went on a long riff about how you know, she was like, oh, when he was a little boy, he loved playing with his Legos. I was like, I just can't really imagine Ndamukong Suh as a Lego master, but apparently he was very skilled.
It's impressive how often you bring up that Mother's Day piece.
What's the link? What's the link? What's the vanity URL?
You know what? Here's what you do. You go to NFL.com/Sessler, and you just scroll down and down and down. I don't think it had a vanity URL.
I just did Mother's Day Mark Sessler. Let's see.
That'll probably do it.
Well, we don't need to invest in too much more time into this.
What it means to be the mother of an NFL star, May 11th, 2017. Oh, under the sidelines banner on the website. And
were hurting for content.
You got, as you said, you had Bernadette Suh, Donna Kelsey under the subhead, Before the Lights.
Two birds, one stone with that one, because you get two players involved there.
Two champion sons now. Maybe you should get a little credit for that.
Yeah, no one seems to be willing to
that angle's been unexplored.
This article is part of the rise of the Eagles and Chiefs.
Is there another mom in here? I just see Bernadette and Donna.
Well, there was a controversial
Diane Bolden.
Diane
Bolden. Is that Anquan's mother?
Someone's mother was taken out of the copy. Isn't that right?
That was Brandon Marshall's mom, if I'm not mistaken, with a different last name. Yes, there was a mom who gave me a great interview, and she was pulled from the project because the son got into some mischief that they didn't want to have advertised in this story.
Ricky will bleep it out. Ricky will bleep it out. Just tell us.
All right, it was back when he had his,
Yep, say no more.
Okay.
Say no more. Moving on.
One question before we move on. One question for the general group. Does anybody here, all these sea poems we're singing about the Bucks' run defense, does anybody here have any idea how important run defense is in today's game? I remember Greg saying last year that teams like the Chiefs and the Patriots are almost inviting other teams to run on them now. I just don't know in today's NFL how important it is to be able to shut down, say, Ezekiel Elliott on a given week.
Also,
I think that's fair.
That's a fair question. And Greg, you bring up the Bolzassant so often. Did you actually think they had a good year last year overall defensively?
Yes, because they ended so strong, and they've been trying to develop some young players in the secondary forever, and they finally did it at the end of the year. And they had some star-making performances. So, yeah, I think they were pretty good defense. To answer your question, Wes, I don't think it's not like one-third as important as stopping a pass. That's the problem.
Also, I mean, when your quarterback is giving the ball away at the pace that Winston did, you're putting your defense with the pick sixes, with the bad field position, in a terrible spot. So I'd almost look at that more than yards allowed on the ground in some cases.
Bowles, we got people paid, Dan. JPP, Shaq Barrett. He's making people money.
Good, good. I'm happy when people make money. Speaking of star-making performances down the stretch for the Bucs, Breshad Perriman really lit it up for the Bucs after Mike Evans went out for the rest of the season in December last year. I think he had over 500 yards and 5 touchdowns in December. So he lands with the New York Jets, who lost Robbie Anderson the day before or the same day, and the Jets lock Perriman up to a one-year, $8 million contract, $6 million of that guaranteed. So whether or not you think that Robbie Anderson is an upgrade, the Jets essentially look to have saved a little bit of money here, gave themselves more flexibility. Boomer Esiason, by the way, former Jet, and now he's a big-time New York radio guy, said yesterday that the Jets offered Robbie Anderson 4 years for 40, and he took 2 years for 20. So I guess they just, he's a combination of betting on himself a little bit, or just he wanted the Jets to go up on that annual number, and it just never happened. But Perryman's in the building. I never thought much of him as a player. I know he's bounced around, former first-round pick with the Ravens, but obviously what he did at the end of last season caught my eye and gives me some optimism that he can play.
He was on my red flag list because he didn't play until the other receivers got injured, and it's my theory that Jameis Winston gooses wide receiver numbers just because he's always throwing. He's not afraid to throw in any situation, whether the guy's open or not. So I don't know if Jameis Winston wide receiver stats transfer to other quarterbacks. I just don't know. And I know Perriman is thought of really high in the fantasy community because he did well during the fantasy playoffs. But again, a guy who didn't really see the field much until those guys got injured in front of him.
Perriman also, a couple days ago, there was a Perriman nugget where he was saying, I want to stay in Tampa. I mean, not even it's the Tom Brady thing, but because I love the Bruce Arians, you know, deep centric offense. And I wonder what happens to him in the Jets. I actually thought in Cleveland two seasons ago, that's what helped him get that Tampa job, was I thought he played all right when the Browns, when before Baker, you know, had last year's, he was throwing the deep ball pretty well, and Perriman did some good stuff. So I think it's more like, do you trust the Jets to get the most out of a player like this? TBD.
And I think you definitely don't want him to be your number one or 1A guy. So you still expect the Jets to go in the draft and go get a guy to pair with Jameson Crowder. And you got Chris Herndon at tight end. We shall see. Mentioned Ndamukong Suh. He was connected to the Cowboys as a possibility for Dallas. But they settle on a different defensive lineman, Dontari Poe. Rap Sheet had this. He signs... he agrees to terms with the Cowboys, leaving the Panthers. He's entering his age 30 season. Like Gerald McCoy, Greg, a guy that maybe was a bigger star two or three years ago, but maybe this man could still play the guitar.
I think he's the type of signing they need to have, because I've been banging the drum. They just don't have any defensive linemen. And I actually think like these low-cost, short-term veterans who can still play are maybe the only people that are undervalued in free agency, because, yeah, you're not getting them for like 3 years, but you can go put them on the field. And that has a lot of value, especially for a team like the Cowboys, who just don't have any defensive linemen. They still need more. I mean, they only have like four guys who I think you could look at as someone that you would want to put out on the field. So he's a good addition.
All right, moving on. Tajae Sharpe is now the new wide receiver for the Minnesota Vikings, who have a vacancy to fill with Stephon Diggs now with Josh Allen in Buffalo. It is a one-year, $1 million contract. He'll start potentially opposite Adam Thielen. Like the Jets, the Vikings, it makes sense that they will perhaps pursue this position further in a highly rich wide receiver draft class where there could be I believe there is some absurd number I read yesterday that 20 or 30 wide receivers could be taken in the first four rounds. Is that even possible?
Or at least that they have first three round grades. Yeah.
But anyway, whatever it might be wrong, the exact note there, but you could get a guy in the top three rounds that you're going to feel pretty good about based on the grades and the scouting from a lot of these teams across the league.
Tajae Sharpe was a guy who was behind Adam Humphries for most of last year and played in December when Humphries was hurt. Played fairly well, but he's also a guy you're not going to expect him to get more than 500 yards in a season, so he's not really moving the needle for that Vikings offense.
I mean, that's one of the worst receiver cores in the league right now behind Thielen. I guess you have Thielen, but after that, they don't have anyone.
I mean, there were times, though, it seemed like by having sort of two stars – In that specific offense, which was, you know, run heavy, a lot like at the top of the league in terms of like multiple tight end sets, that caused some of the issues with Diggs. It's to me with Cousins and how the whole like attack flowed. But I'd be shocked if they're not using that draft pick from Buffalo to wheel and deal and move up and get the wide receiver they want. I mean, I don't know. You can't go into the season with a fourth rounder added to Tajae Sharpe.
Speaking of Stephon Diggs, Mark Sessler dropped a bomb on Twitter. Sam Bradford didn't even know what hit him. Here's the tweet from Mark. Daily reminder that Sam Bradford made $129,982,500 to go 34-48-1. He's not done yet, folks. Never made a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro team. Never started a playoff game. Very possibly lives in a castle right now off the coast of some majestic ocean. And the very Stephon Diggs got into Mark's replies.
Really?
Yes, and I won't say he clapped back at you, Mark.
I didn't take it aggressively, but
no.
Yeah.
But he, I think he wanted to defend a former teammate. This is what Diggs wrote. But let's not forget the teams Sam was a part of. one of the smartest QBs IQ-wise, and one of the most accurate as well. When healthy, one could argue he was pretty damn good. So, Mr. Twitter warrior, Mr. guy on the sidelines, never played a snap. This is the real talk right here from a player from our league.
Wait, I'm the Twitter warrior? That's who, the role I'm playing?
Well, that's basically what he's doing. He's saying, listen, if you were actually there, you would know that there were qualities to him that made him attractive as a player, while not disagreeing with you that he probably got
wildly
overpaid.
No, I think two quick things, though. I think one that, you're not going to go, I'm not doing any of these, threads where you're, adding 55 things to it. But he was the last, first overall pick that got one of those ridiculous rookie deals. And that sort of set it off to begin with. So it's not Sam Bradford's, it's not his fault that he got, he looks ridiculous at payday.
Why did Sam Bradford enter your mind yesterday?
Because at this point, you're just, these groups of friends and all these text threads going around. And I have one friend that is very anti-pro athlete in general, making gobs of money when they're actually sort of a lot of times thuggish or they don't perform well. And I mentioned the Bradford contract as something
that was
take
from 1992? What's going on?
The what?
Is that a take from 1992? What is going on with that?
All these players with their do-rags and their posses.
Well, I don't, I was saying that there are a lot of really actually good people in the NFL, but there are some contrasts that look ridiculous. But my thing with Sam Bradford is I always struggle. If you're to give me top five most memorable Sam Bradford moments,
well, I've got one.
I'm not
for
the
you.
Person
we
to
got
write that article.
Saints game.
I know. I was gonna say, why Diggs is sticking up for him because he was there for that week one Sam Bradford performance in 2017. Wes, you did that top 20 Game Pass games. That should have been number one on the list. Sam Bradford dealing.
Yeah, find me a game with better ball placement by a quarterback than that game.
But what would 2 through 5 be? I'm just saying
none.
He's not someone that there are not a lot of magical moments created by this guy that made $130 million. That's all.
There was a good tie he had, I remember, I think, when he was part of the St. Louis Rams.
And
it was this is very typical Bradford that he had his best performance. Who was it against? The Seahawks, I think, where it ended up in a tie.
He was good for a couple ties a year.
Yeah, and also, Mark, I was watching a really kind of underrated TV series out there, whether you're a fan of wrestling or not. It's called Dark Side of the Ring on Vice, which is a real network that I wasn't really aware of. But it was they did an episode yesterday on the death of Chris Benoit, and it went through a lot of that period in wrestling history, and you dig into how much abuse the pro wrestlers. Wait, play it again, Ricky. Let's hear the guy say, "It's real to me, damn it."
It's still real to me, damn it. I mean, thank you.
How much abuse they do to their bodies. Sam Bradford, Mark, he left his body on the field of the NFL. He in stadiums across the country, that man's body will never be the same. He laid it all out there trying to be a great QB. It just didn't take.
I don't doubt that. And I thought that, maybe 30 people would click like on that thing. And it kind of, for some reason, in this space where everyone's just sitting in their houses, kind of blew up. And I then felt bad because the last thing I want is Sam Bradford and his cousin to see it or something or his wife. I mean, it's
plus you're doing it daily. You said it's going to be a daily reminder.
We're waiting to hear it. It's run its course.
What about Richie Bradford, his 9-year-old son?
Yes. Yeah, then
same
suddenly,
age as Luke.
Yeah. I know. I'm going to take a break from Twitter. I feel like I crossed the boundary there.
So. I don't know if he has a son. If you made $143 million, you'd name your son Richie too.
We have Tyler Eifert news. Sound the Tyler Eifert alarm. The former Bengals tight end has signed a 2-year contract with the Jaguars so he can make some magic with Gardner Minshew, hopefully. It's funny, I have long been, as you guys are alluding to and anybody that listens to the show, been a supporter of Tyler Eifert. I loved him as a player. He was one of the more injury-plagued guys that we've seen in the last decade of the NFL. Finally played 16 games last year, and I lost interest in him. I just, I kind of lost track of him, didn't care about him as much. So I think I was always more intrigued by him playing really well until week 7 and then suffering a gruesome ankle dislocation or a torn labrum or a busted neck, all these different things he went through. And it kept him interesting to me. Once he had a full sample size at his age, I kind of got out on Tyler Eifert. But You know what? It's fine. I'm glad he's still cashing paychecks, and good for him. He got 2 years.
This is up there with the draft occurring on your birthday.
It is. It's right there.
Can't really fault you for not grinding the 2019 Bengals tape.
Yeah. I would love to know what Eifert's numbers were, actually.
It's like 40 for 400 or so. I mean, the problem, you know,
so
not
he's Jimmy
to be
Graham.
Cruel, is after all of these injuries, it's hard to expect you know, a guy to have the potential that he had before all of them happened that got you so excited, Dan.
Yeah, I think it was a foot injury, an ankle injury, a leg injury, all sorts of lower body stuff, and that takes a toll on the big men.
I don't think it happens if Jay Gruden. I think Jay Gruden's there, and he probably said, let's this guy know.
Cool. The Bengals, speaking of which, the Bengals signed right. Von Bell.
I'm just going to step out if you don't mind. I don't have any reason cool. to be here at this point. So.
No, you butted it up well, so there wasn't much okay. else to say. The Bengals signed safety Von Bell, formerly of the Saints, 3-year deal. So Cincinnati keeps spending money. I love it, Wes. Come on back, Wes. Get on the cornhole boards. Crank up the Bob Seger. Fire up the grill. And let's get pumped.
You know, you alluded yesterday to the fact that over the last 5 years, they spent about $50 million, and now it is up to this offseason, $127 million they've spent on unrestricted free agents from other teams. They really needed to overhaul the entire secondary. They bring in Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander from the Vikings, Von Bell from the Saints. They signed LaShawn Sims from the Titans. And I'm a little worried about those cornerbacks, but the safety duo of Von Bell and Jesse Bates is really good. Sean Williams, who had been starting at safety, looks to me like a guy who can move into sort of that nickel linebacker role. This is a much better secondary than they had last year.
I have a question. If they were picking 19th and had no assurances at all of getting any quarterback, would they be doing all this? Or is this, you know, not unlike Tom Brady and Tampa Bay? Like, they finally feel like we've got our dude and... Mm. We're stacking this up.
I mean, you got to give Zach Taylor a chance, right? To me, that's part of it. This guy came in, and it seemed like half the team got injured in his first year there, and then the other half, they're just washing away. They're not even there anymore. You got to give this guy some players, and now he's got some.
I do wonder. Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just going to say it makes it seem like the Bengals are almost self-aware that they are viewed a certain way and they need to make changes, which would be, you know, highly welcome. Go ahead, Greg. Well,
I just wonder if the effect of that fan base getting so apathetic, they probably right now have the most apathetic fan base in the NFL. No one's in that stadium. And that is self-awareness. Maybe Mike Brown is looking at it and thinking, like, we cannot afford another 1-15 season or else we're going to lose this town.
Yeah, maybe Paul Brown appeared to him the way that, like, you know, like Obi-Wan Kenobi Force Ghost does occasionally and says, clean this up, son.
If
please
Paul Brown
this
appeared
up.
To him, he would not be saying spend money.
Oh, well, fair.
You would fire him.
I didn't get the reference, Mark, but I follow along.
I knew you didn't. It's an adventure science fiction film that came out in 1977 and 1980.
Finally,
a sequel.
Devin Funchess. Pelissero reports the Packers are expected to sign Devin Funchess, so all their problems are taken care of. Brian Gutekunst doesn't need to do any more work on the wide receiver room because Devin Funchess is in the building. And now someone's going to say, yeah, but he looked like he could have been a good signing with the Colts until he broke his collarbone in week one. All right, go ahead. Get excited about Devin Funchess. If I'm getting excited about Breshad Perriman, you can get excited about Devin Funchess. Have fun with it.
Hard pass on both. How about that?
Cool.
I mean,
cool.
Funchess has some potential, cool. but does he really have more potential than Alan Lazard? I don't know how much more he does have.
The Lizard. Finally, the news we've all been waiting for. The Eagles sign cornerback Nickel Roby Coleman.
Coleman.
NRC. So they pair NRC with Darius Slay in their remade secondary. And, of course, Ricky, pop quiz. Your football knowledge has really, I would imagine, gone up tenfold since you joined our podcast. So I'm going to hit you up with a little trivia. Nickel Roby Coleman, most famous and his forever legacy in the NFL will be...
The Saints game, the no call.
Very good, Ricky. That's my girl. Ow!
Yeah.
God, love you. Anyway.
Cool.
He's on the Eagles now.
Nice ball player. Nice ball player. I like him.
A little aggressive.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Another team that remade their secondary.
A little bit.
They also signed Will Parks from the Broncos, who had several teams interested in his services, can play either safety or nickel corner. So they've got a pretty interesting secondary now, much better than last year's.
Hey, ultimately, he helped, you know, he sent them to the Super Bowl. I mean, got a little lucky with the no call there, but it was a smart move.
That's true. Ricky, since you're, let's do a little heat check. Late last night or early in the morning, the stimulus deal passed in Washington.
Yep.
Will we all be getting checks? Again, not a joke. I want to know, does everyone get a check or do certain people get checks? Who gets a check now that this multi-trillion dollar stimulus deal has been passed in the Senate?
I think it's just going to bail out the major companies, right? So they can pay their employees. Like, I don't... Greg's shaking his head. Do you know more than I do? I don't know.
Congress, sorry.
No, they families are getting it. You might get one there, Erica, because you don't have a, you know, a spouse.
Yeah.
So like, is a 19-year-old getting like $2,000 handed to them, and they're probably like,
so what do I?
It's like
a
flat. It's like a flat rate for basically anyone that filed, you know, taxes.
You know, Simone, Mark, your wife, she does your taxes. I know so much about you, and I have it on good authority that she might be looking to cook some books to get a stimulus check in your house.
Listen, I would invite it. You know, but if you're sitting around waiting for this check to come hit your front door, I just feel like with the way that, you know, things are operating, that will be a nice moment in 2026. You got to be planning more than just waiting for some, you know, spending money to hit the seat, please. Yeah. But we have been cooking the books tax wise for years and years. So come get me, FBI/CIA/ whoever else.
Uncle Sam, usually people.
IRS.
Yeah. IRS.
IRS. Yeah. Primarily the IRS didn't come to me. You know.
The CIA knocks on your door. Excuse me, sir.
They got bigger issues right now.
That's what's happening in the news. Before we sign off, very sad news. Sean Sullivan, we know him as Sully. He used to work with us. You know him as a longtime listener of the show. His mother passed away this week, which is, you know, really tragic and terrible. So we send out our condolences to Sully.
Love you, Sully.
One of the best dudes there is.
Yeah.
So he's going through, obviously, a very tough time during circumstances that were already difficult. So, Sully, we love you, and hang in there, buddy. Really sorry to hear that. We will be back on Thursday, tomorrow, with our fourth show of the week. So make sure you check that out. Also, a little plug, Will Brinson over at CBS. We love our boy Will. I'm going to be on his program tomorrow, the Pick Six podcast, I believe it is.
Yeah, it's good. I've watched that a few times. I've enjoyed it.
I'll be joining Will tomorrow, so look for that. Follow Will on Twitter. He's a great Twitter artist.
Sent me a very nice text yesterday asking how Keisha and I were doing with the pregnancy. What a nice guy Will Brinson is.
He's a Southern gentleman. That's what
yes,
he is.
Absolutely.
CNN tonight too. They asked me just to come on and talk about kind of the NFL, the effects, this whole thing. So 7 p.m. Eastern on CNN.
I was quarreling with the Cuomo brothers on CNN on Monday night, so... They must have went back to the
They obviously said, we've had enough of Dan. Let's try to get this other guy in here.
I robbed a bank and went live on my Instagram when I did it.
Well, Mark and Dan, that practice with Kaepernick in the Sky Sports hit really has come in handy for you guys. They must have seen that and started to ask you about politics.
Everything took off the minute that we, you know, we sat and completed that 8-minute assignment.
Still
to our heads.
The most surreal assignment. There have been many surreal assignments at NFL Media, but the first year we went to London, we went to Sky Sports, and there are obviously the four of us, and they split us up into groups of two. Wes and Greg sat on a couch with an attractive woman who asked them questions about fantasy, all fantasy questions like, what do you fancy most about fantasy football? You're experts. And they were laughing it up and yucking it up. And then we got sent down to this basement studio. It was like a hardcore
newsroom, and we got put under these hot lights with the two head anchors of Sky Sports to be asked about what, Mark?
Sky Sports well, News.
It was I believe, you know, three or four questions in a row about Kaepernick, but they were also pressed for time. It was at the end of the hour, and so the minute they asked these, like, A-bomb Kaepernick questions, which we were practiced not to, you know, we were not thinking that was coming, they're like, please, go, like, without verbally, like, non-verbally, like, move through your answers. So Dan and I were just, like, sweating.
I'm gonna.
And then, to make clear, it wasn't even Sky Sports. It was just Sky.
It was Sky News,
CNN. Part of the station.
So we went back up the elevator, like two guys that had seen too much in war. We couldn't believe, but we were just basically being the mouthpiece.
Good analogy.
For the $13 billion NFL about the health of the league and concussions and Colin Kaepernick. And then as we get back to the holding area, there's Greg and Wes kicked back with their hands on their heads. Like, fantasy's just a game. And once people realize that, they'll be a lot better off.
That created a division between the group that did not cease for the rest of the trip.
We were drinking tea, I believe, at the time. And then the next year, you made it clear that Wes and I had to do the Sky News hit that year, thinking it was going to be like ultimate payback, but it was a totally relaxed situation there, too.
Yeah, there weren't like hard-hitting off the field.
So they were just
issues.
Like, "Hey, what do you think about like football in England?" It's great.
All right, so we will see you again tomorrow. ATN Podcast presented by Intuit QuickBooks, official sponsor of the NFL. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the Mailman, the Old Boss, and Rick Hollywood in her domicile. Until Thursday.